This is Maria Rizaris presenting New Voices, a program which interviews brand new writers from all walks of life, deep in the throes of their writing projects. I will interview them, get them to read a sample of their work, then get a total stranger to critique them. Well, guys, episode 18, and I don't even know what to say about this episode. It is so beautiful. Vanessa Lee Ahmet is an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander woman born on Thursday Island. By trade, a scientist, a respected epidemiologist, featured in programs like The Drum and The Point, and as she says, someone who could see and translate data and graphs into policy. But she says there came a point where she could no longer hide behind the numbers, and her great compulsion to express herself in different ways broke out into poetry, and break out it did with force and magnificence. Her poems wrapped in the supernatural. You can smell the desert in it. You can see a story unfolding in front of you. She wouldn't let me discuss their culture, her culture, our culture, she said. Wow. Her critiquer is Arendte woman Aurora Little Christie, an established Brisbane poet who is deeply immersed in exploring her own mixed background, which includes Jamaica, Ireland, Scotland, and the Northern Territory. Listen to this interview. It'll crack you open in the best possible way. This episode becomes pretty transformational. It deals with the haunting of the past, allows us to perceive how delicately these two women hold the present. Under their gaze, it is infused with hope, optimism, intelligence, and clarity. For the first time in my experience as an Australian person, I saw a bright glimpse for a future which is enriched by opening up, as Vanessa suggests, to the beauty of Indigenous culture. Enjoy this episode. Let it sink into your skin. Or should I say, try not letting it sink into your skin. Good luck with that. It is funny, it is disturbing, it is sweet, and it is very beautiful. Welcome, Vanessa, to the program.
Thank you, Maria.
And welcome also to your newly printed book called
A Poetry Collection, Cockatoos in the Mangroves.
Just before we got in here, we were looking at this beautiful little video of your science and education paper.
I'm a social epidemiologist in medicine and public health. I look at the social issues that impact on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to inform new policies.
If you had to describe yourself at a party, you know, you would say...
Actually, saying that I'm a social epidemiologist encourages so much more conversation.
And an epidemiologist in this day and age, in this moment of time, must be, I don't know, the sexiest job on earth.
You know what? The amount of people have contacted me that I've known for years and said, Vanessa, I now know what you do. Yeah. We try and stop the spread of viruses and diseases. We try and keep it contained.
Do you look at that data from an Indigenous point of view only?
My role in the whole of COVID-19 took more of the social issues. So I looked at people going through homelessness, the escalation of suicides and mental health, and the impact of COVID on people's,
yeah,
and what's happened to people and what services are in place and what we need to do better for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, for women, for the LGBT population and the wider population in, yeah, general.
And I remember one of the first statements that you made, the data tells the story.
It does.
And yet you pressed up against this little COVID-safe screen your book of poetry. How does an epidemiologist start to write poetry and why and how? Tell me that.
It goes back to how we started this conversation when you asked me what I did.
Yeah, yeah.
And so many people don't know what I do. And I thought, they're not going to read the papers I write. I thought, how can I translate this? To be honest with you, all of the data, it was actually giving me trauma because I could see what was happening to people.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find another solution. And I write all these papers for scientific journals. I work on policy with the government. I was walking past the library and there was a notice up and it said Women's Writers Group Poetry Group at Newtown Library. And I walked in the library and there was probably about 15 women doing poetry and spoken word. And an Aboriginal woman got up and she spoke about her journey of defeating heroin. And I was so moved by listening to her story. And I thought, you're one of the people I read about in my numbers.
Oh. So suddenly there was a kind of a human flesh and blood element.
Yeah.
To the stat.
I went home and I just wrote poetry. Sat down and I just cried and cried.
Yeah.
And I just kept writing every time I'd feel like it was so overwhelming with the data. I just needed that outlet. And all of a sudden I've written one book and I was like, wow, I've written a whole, you know, I handwrite.
Yeah.
You know, because of my age.
It's actually very retro.
So then the second book happened and then I wrote the third book. And I thought, right, I need to do something with this. I need to share this.
Why turn to poetry?
I actually did comedy first. I went to a stand-up comedy class because I actually realised if I wasn't on a platform that was about my work, I really was quite afraid to talk in public. I went to the stand-up comedy class and you know what? There were 17 academics in that class and all of them from health and medicine. Yeah, I knew it wasn't just me. To pass the class, you had to actually do a stand-up comedy gig at the RSL Club.
An unsuspecting audience.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander woman, you know, and standing in front of the RSL, and you know, they're all these old Caucasian men. You know, it wasn't a happy crowd.
Did you make them laugh?
I laughed at my own jokes. I laughed at all of my jokes so that I couldn't see if anyone else was laughing, and I passed.
Cool. So you're a woman who is totally opening herself up. Was that to unleash another part of your brain, or was that to help with the poetry, or was that to help with the data?
Probably a mixture of both, because trying to work out how to have that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to people in the community. All these people just didn't know how to communicate with me anymore. And I didn't know how to communicate with them because all I did was look at data and, you know, hang out with all these data nerds. And
wow. You know, stare at it together?
Yeah. I've been to all these different countries, but I actually haven't been to the country. You know, just go in, look at the data.
Oh, you haven't heard any of my intros, have you? I make merciless fun. So this is going to be such rich material. I'm going to have to do a stand-up comedy routine course.
I got this.
I'm sorry, there's too much fun in this room at the moment. I'm looking at these poems, and I can only call them really beautiful and unsettling. Most of the writers that I interview here are very surprised at the type of voice that they developed that is their writer's voice.
I was very surprised. And when I started writing, I couldn't stop.
The girl ones, they were really gorgeous. You're from the Torres Strait Islands, correct?
I'm Aboriginal and Torres Strait. So I'm from Cape York and the Torres Strait. So I was born in Thursday Island. Uh-huh. We didn't move to the mainland completely till I was probably about six. We lived near Port Douglas. We were one of the first black families. My first time of seeing a whole lot of Caucasian people, because I came from a family that's completely Indigenous. Mm-mm. And I remember the first time coming down, like, and I really struggled to talk. We experienced a lot of racism, my brothers and I. You know, I even remember being really young and first time I had to go to church. And I remember sitting with one of the teachers from the Catholic school doing religious instructions. She looked at me and she said, "You would prefer to do your culture than to sit here with me." And I looked at her and I said, "Yes. I mean, my culture teaches me more." And I said, "We learn integrity. We have laws that are embedded to, and connected to the earth and everything around us and about Indigenous philosophies. We connect to everything." I said, "We know where what fish to catch. We know where to get food from and what to leave for the environment. We know what plants we can eat at certain times." And I remember her just looking at me and she said, I'm going to sit here and have a cup of tea and read my book and you can read something from your culture.
Is that a good approach?
I think it was really good. She accepted that this is who I was.
You sort of obviously imbibed a Western type of education. You creamed it, right?
Yeah, but because I love science and math, maths is like the
its own language.
Well, it's like the manager or the boss, the guru of science. Everybody in my family are all artists. So my mum plays five instruments.
Yeah.
And like coming from Cape York and the Torres Strait, like my family also created their own dance teams. I'm the only Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander person you will probably meet. Well, ask not to come back to the dance class.
So you were the runt, dance runt.
I was. You know, my grandmother put her hand on my hand and she said, "Vanessa, some people are good at something and some people are good at other things. And that's okay." I went to QUT and did my education degree.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to UQ for my master's and then I did my PhD in medicine and public health at Griffith University.
I'm really wanting to dive into some of your poems.
Every single poem has a story.
What, 40 there?
81 poems.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, pick one.
Okay.
And tell us one
story. I'll open the book. I'll just open the book randomly. Well, it went to girl.
You go. Which one?
Girl, contradiction. Brown skin glistening, long grass rustle, bare feet pounding. Bush air filtering, laughter crackling, voices blending, suddenly broken. Words unspoken, visual action slicing, friends into fractions. Witnessing, disturbing behaviour, reporting abuse, societal contradiction to favour. Happiness stolen, childhood fallen, eyes glazed with trauma. sadly praying for our father.
Oh, just sent chills through me. And the thing about our father, which is almost like a Catholic prayer.
Mm-hmm. I went to Adelaide and I was visiting a friend.
Mm-hmm.
She said to me, oh, do you want to go for a drive? Where the missions, where they used to take the children. We went. She said it was no longer there and they'd all cleared the land and grass was quite tall. It was wet. It was overcast. Parked and we walked inside and there's a nice garden. And I saw a shadow of a girl running, and all she had on was white bloomers. Like, I didn't see her full body. All I saw was the top half, and I just saw this shadow run past. And I looked again, and I walked back to the car, and I said, did you see that young girl? No. She said, we were the only ones there. Oh, okay. She said, where you were standing was near the dormitories. As you were walking out, she said, that's where the kids were all taken out towards an open area. And the image of the young girl stayed in my mind. And I wrote three poems, and I saw her life in front
like
of me.
Like that, like a shadow.
Like a shadow in front of me.
Yeah.
And I saw what happened to her. Like, it was like she witnessed something, and she was running, and the trauma of the witnessing of the child abuse.
So when you, oh, gosh. When you wrote the poem, do you feel like you're carrying it? Do you feel like you're holding it? Do you feel like you need to express it, or is it just you reacting?
When I see something like that, it's for me to translate it. I wrote this poem. It's called Rock Desert Pearl. So I kept seeing this girl dancing in the desert. And so I just sat down and I wrote this poem. Blue dress swirl, dark skin sparkle, dancing in the sun to the beat of her own drum. Toes tapping, hands talking, head nodding, eyes glowing, hips swaying to the rhythm of the gum leaves playing. Wind humming, magpie calling, goanna basking, red dust whispering, kookaburra laughing, blue dress swirl to the drumming of the land, rock desert pearl.
Oh, wow. There's something about the rhythm of the land that comes through. You know, all the elements of nature around you are part of your kind of dance with life.
It is. It's about dancing with life. Suicide Prevention Australia asked me if they could have that poem for their Christmas cards. So they sent it all over the world.
Yeah.
It just, I feel a peace when I've written it.
When you feel that peace, that you've acquitted your task.
Very much. And that's it. I've done it and I write the next one.
Do you want to do another random one?
Sure. Okay. This is called Call to Order. Artistic creases around the window to your soul. What is your story that remains untold? A talented youth whose family struggles were a reminder of adverse colonial imposed troubles. You had a dream. You had a mission. Joining two cultural worlds through art and dance was more than anyone could envision. Your performances endorsed your humble beginnings. They exposed the raw inequalities etched deep within your feelings. No one heard the voices inside your head. We were all too busy watching your passion for art, dance and life instead. We didn't register that the performances you did on your own may have been your inner voice screaming that you felt alone. Your talent, creativity, humbleness, love and kindness taken so quickly in a world of blindness enabled the ghost of spiritual oppression who claimed our ancestors by rape, murder and aggression. For murder, rewards were given. Perpetrators receive no flack, and the shadows continue to haunt this land as we now witness the self-hanging of the blacks. Well, enough is enough, we call you to order. We release your oppressive spirit from our lands. Go back to where you came from. Your spirit's no longer our mould. Our ancestral lines are strong. It is our connections that we hold. You may think you have won by taking life before time. Just remember, kinship is our story. And we will survive through traditional song lines.
That's a different type of poem, but my gosh. So this is about, I'm guessing, a dancer who committed suicide.
And took his life. I wrote that poem actually about David Page. I went three times I saw it, Table 8. The first time I heard David Page do Table 8, and I remember how he talked about being Aboriginal, how he talked about his family and his love for his family and who he was. And for the first time in my life, I never felt ashamed of being Indigenous.
Oh my gosh, Vanessa.
And I wrote that poem from me to him.
Yeah.
Because when I came to the mainland, we experienced so much racism. So much racism. And I felt ashamed. I felt so ashamed. I actually hid in numbers.
Were you surprised when he flipped it over for you? He obviously felt embodied something beautiful about your culture. That were you
our
surprised?
Culture. Our culture. I was, because I didn't realise that I had felt ashamed of my culture. I didn't realise it until that. All the books you read about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people is that we're alcoholics, that we're abusive, that we live in poverty, like this and this and this. But my family wasn't like that.
Yeah.
And yet to come to the mainland and be told, because I'm black, this is who I am. I was just so shocked. And I could feel myself slowly disappearing. No.
And yet this poem, even though it's got those elements of, man, I'm angry about this, it's more a strident, this happened, not good, and I'm proud of who I am. I don't hate you for it, but this needs to be said.
Exactly. I'm not angry. I'm angry for what's happened, and I'm angry for the way it's been delivered.
Yeah.
I am angry that it still exists in policy. We still have our culture. We still have our kinship.
Yeah.
I still have my family. You're right. I'm angry and I'm hurt that this man saw no other way out.
What do you think white people will never get?
A majority of our conversation is nonverbal. Mm. And it's not just nonverbal to ourselves. We read the environment. We read nature. You can read the trees, you can watch the cloud movement, the birds. And then through our eyes, we can translate it to each other, through our expressions.
Do you think that's something that is taught you, or that it's in a preparedness of mind and of spirit?
Yeah. I think because our culture allows us. That comes back to understanding of totems.
Yeah.
Totems help you to understand your purpose in life. So one of my totems I inherited from my grandmother was the mangrove seed pod drops on a king tide.
Yeah.
And then it plants itself into the sand on another beach and creates a network.
Oh, wow.
For life. Yeah.
Which is exactly what you've done.
Yeah.
If you had one message that you wanted to leave this interview with about what you are saying through these poems, what would it be?
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture is a unique and beautiful culture. And we are all in Australia. So embrace our history and our culture, because we are really good people.
I'm so glad to have interviewed you and to have you on this program. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you, Maria. That was so lovely. Thank you.
And now on to the critique part of our program with Aurora Little Christie. Aurora, we've just emerged from that. What did you think?
That was so beautiful, really touching. And I really admire her. Her courage and her journey is so beautiful. It's like poetry. Her life is like poetry. It's like a whole story, like how the narrative runs and the metaphorical journey as well as the physical one. It's so beautiful.
Again, like the mangrove pod, transplanting information.
Yes. It's so interesting how the connection between like what your elders, the name they give you, the totem they give you, and how that strongly plays out in your life. It's just so divine. And that's just the depth of our culture. It's so interconnected like that.
I saw two types of poems there. I get bossy in these interviews. You're going to have to not do that whole non-verbal thing with me.
Okay, I'll do that. What did I see? Well, I saw myself a lot in these poems, and I almost felt like she was talking about me. It was so relatable, and I could very much relate to that last one about Uncle David Page, who grew up down the road from my mom, actually, my family, as a playwright and theatre maker. When I first saw that at his memorial, that's what inspired me to write my own stuff and to see somebody translate their whole life story onto stage so confidently and with such a range of, it just took you everywhere. It was just gave me a lot of affirmation that our stories are worth putting on stage.
The Girl and the Desert Pearl poems, which were almost channeling, and the strident one that's telling a story, but it's also a mental exposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like on that channeling note, it's very present in my work as well. When the inspiration points that she draws upon from experience or from what she sees or like a vision, I can Yeah, definitely relate to that. The rhythm and cadence of her poetry is really awesome as well. To write like that is like a skill.
And yet really she's taken it up late in life, somebody who's got a lot of authority in their own field.
And that says something also about these systems that we work in. I don't believe the solution will be found within the institutions that are causing the oppression. And I can see how the need to find an outlet because of the pain of these statistics.
What role do you think that art and poetry play in dealing with really complex issues?
I think they play a huge part because they speak to our empathy. They move us to action. And it's almost like they plant the seed in us to want to do something. You can change somebody's mind more with a poem than you can
with a policy. I thought you were going to say politician needs to be more poetic.
Yes, I cannot see these institutions allowing the expression and the freedom and flow that artists hold and embody into that world.
Well, I think politicized language is very much about detaching. It's sort of like the solution, you know, which could mean getting rid of a whole population or tribe or whole field of trees or something.
Yes, and I've thought a lot about this lately.
Ah, right, okay.
As a poet and as the person I am, I'm quite airy and I don't like conflict at all. Throughout this year, that's been sort of a problem. There's been moments and situations and with the climate of our country where I've had to be aggressive or put boundaries down. I'm not sure how to establish. I actually started doing fighting. I started doing Muay Thai to try and channel that that aggression.
How did it affect your poetry?
When I first started writing poetry, I was very emotive. I came a lot of the time from a place of anger, wasn't able to speak about my experience growing up, always aware that I was different to other people. I grew up, went to pretty white schools in white neighborhoods, and I just knew that I didn't want to stand out. And I didn't want to be different, part of my own insecurities and also the societal expectations. When I first started doing poetry, it came from this place of I can speak now. I've been given a platform and a space to tell my story. So it just came out like, rah, 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 rah. I've come to this place of neutrality and peacefulness. And I think it doing fighting made me not afraid to channel that energy again and not afraid of what people will think about it, because it's the truth. And sometimes the truth needs to be delivered in a way where it will capture people.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, because we sort of dove straight into into Vanessa and her vivid absorption in life.
So I was born in Brisbane, raised in Brisbane. My dad is Jamaican and my mom is Aboriginal and Irish and Scottish. My Aboriginal family is Aranda from Alice Springs through my grandfather's side. In terms of my Aboriginality, I was disconnected from a lot of that side of the family in my childhood, but I always found that the journey I've been on is one of reconnection. Relating it to Vanessa, where she grew up quite heavily in her culture and around her family, I had kind of the opposite experience. When I got to a certain age, I had this desire and this kind of restlessness to understand more of where I come from and more about my culture. I always had a pull towards country and dreaming and kinship, but I didn't have the family to call on to get this knowledge and understand more. I guess my journey with that has been going back to country, reconnecting with family.
You're an established poet. You've got a beautiful website. I've read some of your poetry. It's just lovely.
For ages I was writing poetry. What I was writing I wouldn't classify as poetry, because poetry, from what I learned, had all these specific requirements and these rules to it that I wasn't following. I've always been doing theatre, and I got given an opportunity to write something for a little panel discussion at La Boite in Brisbane that I did a performance where I wrote about my experience and people seemed to like it, and I just kept writing ever since, and now I'm called a poet. I'd say theatre is more of my focus. Poetry is this something that fuels me and also is like a side hustle as well.
A side hustle.
But when I do have the space, it's very therapeutic. Vanessa mentions something like this, but it allows me to speak what is trapped in this in my body, my mind, in my emotions. It allows me to give it form so that I can release it.
You know, can I ask something really ignorant? Like, in Indigenous culture, I've never heard of poetry. And so here I am with two Indigenous women who are poets. Like, give it to me. Tell me.
It depends how you define it. I know a lot of Indigenous languages, they're quite poetic in the way they're spoken. Like, gives you a different reality. When you can name something in your native tongue, it almost changes the essence of what that is, form, and gives it
flavor and
definitely. So in that sense, I'd say it is poetic because it sees beyond the first layer.
Yeah, sort of like embedded in the language. And English is really it's a beautiful language. I love English. It's my playing field. I love it.
There's a lot of things that can't be translated because in this Western understanding of things, they're missing. Well, I did a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Drama, and I started doing theatre and poetry with a group called Did Youth Arts in Brisbane. There was a lot of fire in the work we did, and it really gave me passion to stand strong in who I am.
When you're doing your poetry and your theatre, is it about giving a message to white people, to the colonials, or is it to speak to your own people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think at the beginning it was speaking to white people because I had lived so long in this white world. Honestly, it was like waking from a hypnosis where I was like, hang on, this is not right. And trying to bridge that gap, almost being in this in-between place, I was trying to say, like, hey, isn't this wrong? Don't you think this is as messed up as I do? I think a lot of the words I speak are for healing too.
Now that there are little people in your life and you're an auntie, do you want them to hear those stories, or do you want them to be different stories by the time they get older?
I think to know where we're going, we need to know where we're coming from. And these stories are still so relevant for these kids, these young ones. Unfortunately, this will be a part of their experience as well.
From Vanessa's work, that these are passions so truly expressed.
And I think that's what happens when you write from that place of pure emotion and that vulnerable, raw place, is it will contain in it like a blueprint of humanity. So much that can be related to in it.
Beautiful words.
Like, I wonder what her process has been in writing it, because it almost feels as like it's spoken word, the rhythm of it and the way it crescendos. Just what a blessing it was to hear her speak and hear her story. I'm very happy and proud to have people like that as leaders in our community, and just blessed.
It's been such a pleasure, you know, interviewing you, Aurora, knowing that that healing is going to take place on a larger level where there are people like you and Vanessa. Wonderful.
You too.
This is Maria Rosaris, and it was a pleasure to bring you this program, produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH with the support and inspiration of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I look forward to your company next time.